First up, we have our keynote speaker, which is Nick Krohn from X-Cole. He's been with X-Cole for 9 years now and deals with the international sales and marketing of metallurgical and thermal-grade coals across the globe. So with that being said, I'd like to bring Nick up to give our keynote presentation.
Morning, everyone. I want to apologize in advance for either being too general or too specific, but I'll be here at the conference for most of the day, so if you have any questions, please feel free to stop me and ask away. Also, the presentation will be available to the group whenever they post to the website. I'll start by just explaining who X-Cole is and what we're doing. We are a marketing company specifically. We don't own any assets outright in the U.S. We do outside the U.S., but all of our efforts in the U.S. are basically an extension of the producers here in the U.S. We market from some of the most efficient and prominent longwall and underground miners here in the U.S., who some of them are here and some of them you may know very well. The U.S. supply base for X-Cole is the core of our business. We've built upon that with growing our footprint outside the U.S. almost as a hedge to be able to become a better supplier to and counterparty to our partners here in the United States. We are a team of over 115 people now today. We have 20 offices globally with some other niche businesses that allow us to kind of tap into markets where or some of our competitors may have a difficult time doing. Here's just a trend of where we sit globally in terms of our export growth. Through May, we're probably at this 29 million ton mark for exports globally in 2019. We finished 2018 just under 20 million tons. You can see the split here. The gray bar is our exports from the U.S., and the blue bar represents our exports outside the U.S. In 2017, most of our portfolio non-U.S. was simply traded. We took a buy and sell position there and just had a traded book running out of our desk in Singapore. In 2018, we decided to make actual investments and take equity in some of these operations. So you can see there was a little bit of a kind of rebalancing of our non-U.S. portfolio where we ended up decreasing by about 2 million tons, all while maintaining our U.S. book quite strong. So in 2019, we expect some of these non-U.S. investments to come to fruition. And be able to kind of reach us to that 29 million ton mark. The range of 26 to 29 is obviously we can't predict the future. It's almost impossible to determine coal prices beyond 1 or 2 months out. So there's some uncertainty in that number, but we're pretty confident that we'll probably hit the midpoint of that number there. Here is a mix of our exports, thermal and metallurgical. We are predominantly a metallurgical exporting company, but kind of are opportunistic in our thermal exports until 2018, in which we now have an exclusive arrangement with CONSOL Energy, who's here today, to export their Northern App high BTU coal to the export market. So you can see our split is now about 70-30, and it will probably go up to about 65-35 in 2019. This is maybe an extrapolation of that first graph, but here's just our split between non-U.S. and U.S. coal by percentages. Our target is to have this 2019 bar 50-50. It allow us to be a better partner to all parties, both here in the U.S. and outside the U.S., both of our customers, our logistics, our service providers. We're able to create a natural hedge by having a diversification of supply. So when there is a market downturn, we're able to maintain our customers during that time, maybe shift the supply to them, as well as continue to maintain our traditional offtake from the U.S. despite where international prices may be. As most of you know, the growth is in Asia, so the logistics from the Atlantic market or the U.S. into the Pacific Basin is quite expensive. So when prices are very low, those logistics costs don't go down. They just eat a bigger part of that total delivered price to the customer. So having these multiple footprints allows us to become a better partner to our suppliers here in the U.S. Here is a split of where our coal was going. You don't have to, I'm not going to go through all of these years, but I'd say fast forward to 2018. We have a much more balanced portfolio today. It's taken us some time to get here. You can see our reliance heavily on the Asia market, Japan, India, China. And I'll just maybe touch on a point I made on the last slide. This Chinese growth of it's up to 17.4% of our total portfolio. That's on the back of 25% tariffs on U.S. coal. So not one ton of U.S. coal was going to China there. So it was a way we were able to maintain our Chinese customers by supplying non-U.S. coal into China. We maintained our customers for whenever those tariffs, you know, knock on wood, are lifted at some point in the near future. I'd say some of the key takeaways here is the growth in India. That's a theme throughout this presentation, and there's a few slides later touching on that, but India is a major growth market for met and thermal coal out of the U.S., also globally. I'd say one thing we'll add in 2019 is the Southeast Asia bar here. So we're growing our footprint in Southeast Asia. It's quite challenging logistically to reach buyers in Southeast Asia due to restricted drafts and, you know, expensive sea freight. But we'll do that with non-U.S. supply and able to, you know, get some of our U.S. coals in there as well. Maybe I'll take a look back of where we were up to end of 2018, and I'll give some my views on where we see the market going forward. I'd say since April or so of 2016, which was basically the bottom of the four-year bear cycle, we've seen resilient, strong coking coal prices as well as thermal coal prices on the back of very, very strong demand and quite limited supply that has entered the market since then. Specifically on the coking coal side, and I have a graph to show of where pricing is, but we've been able to, the market's been able to sustain very significant pricing well above $170 on average for the past 8 or so years. Of course, extreme volatility from $74 to $315+, but in 2018, we averaged over $200 pricing, so that's been quite favorable to suppliers, and the limited supply coming to market has been able to have those allow those supplies to actually reach market and realize or monetize those coal prices. On the thermal side, we see significant demand out of Asia, predominantly in the Pacific Basin, with growth in Southeast Asia. The challenge, obviously, for the U.S. is logistically getting coal there, and we also have a bit of a quality issue for the predominant U.S. supply out of the U.S. But the strength in that market has pulled up Newcastle thermal pricing, which is the predominant index in the Pacific Basin. That has sucked into that market coals from Colombia and South Africa and has allowed the U.S. to capitalize on strong pricing that was a result into Europe. That may seem like a lot to explain, but we have a few graphs, and I'm certainly here afterwards to talk in more detail. And then obviously we are in an unprecedented period with tariffs on coal that certainly nobody could predict, whether that's in China at 25% on top of the current most favored nation tariffs in China of between 3 and 6% depending on coking or thermal coal respectively. And as well as tariffs that we're currently see for U.S. coal into Turkey of 13.7%. Fortunately, the U.S. just reduced the steel tariff into Turkey of Turkish steel into the U.S. from 50% to 25%. So hopefully there's some reciprocation there by the Turkish government to reduce the tariff on U.S. coal into Turkey. So certainly positive direction there. And then we're at a point with India as well, where we're currently negotiating the GSP, which is the General System of Preferences, which is basically the U.S. kind of waiving tariffs on Indian products into the U.S. That's currently being negotiated now and has had a one-month extension, but poses a risk certainly to the growth in India as well as to what may result, which is a tariff on U.S. products into India, predominantly coal, which is would be a big impact to the U.S. thermal market, especially off the East Coast. I apologize for the translation of this graph here, but here's basically a summary of where we are today in terms of coking coal prices. So the orange graph represents the, I'd say, global benchmark pricing for coking coal. The yellow graph represents high-vol A coal here out of the U.S., which is a kind of a bit of a laggard, but follows the same trend as PLV coal does due to some of the replacement characteristics of those coals. Here's where I mentioned that over 8.5 years, we've averaged about $174 through this period. If you told somebody in October 2010, don't worry, you'll have $175 going forward for 8.5 years, they wouldn't be so worried. But most of those buyers or most of those producers didn't make it halfway through, as you've seen prices bottom through 13, 14, 15 in the first half of 2016. We've seen unprecedented volatility in coking coal prices since, I'd say, July 2016. That first kind of catalyst there were extreme rains and flooding in Shanxi province in China, which created a significant demand by the Chinese to basically buy coal at any cost, which allowed coal prices to push up through $300 by the end of 16. And then you had everything from cyclones in Queensland, and a result in flooding, to force majeures and mine outages, as well as railway issues that still persist today in Australia, that has allowed prices to remain quite strong. If you look at, I'd say, forward pricing from where we are today, we're still in a very strong price environment. We're going to probably average over $200 here through the course of 2019, just based on where kind of the forward curve is projecting prices to be. Now, that isn't a very liquid curve, but there's a lot of open interest, which is activity on that exchange to allow prices to maintain this $190-plus level into 2019. The uncertainty is certainly beyond that. The open interest on that exchange ends in 2022, and those prices are, as of Thursday, those prices are $170. So if you told somebody in the mining industry that prices will be $170 to 2022, they'd write the check and keep going today with significant comfort. But again, the lack of liquidity on that index or that exchange makes it difficult for those prices really to come to fruition. So it's something that's developing, will allow buyers and sellers to be able to kind of hedge prices to monetize those values at that point in the future. But we're currently not there yet, but certainly we're on our way. So what happened in 2018 as a result of those prices? I'd say the U.S. was probably the biggest beneficiary, adding some of the most growth to the market of almost 6 million tons in a 15 million ton growth period. It's hard to believe that with prices over $200 that you're only going to have 15 million tons of additional growth, which is 5% or so, just a bit over 5%. So it shows that there's lack of new investment in the coal space. We have a couple of graphs later to kind of elaborate on that, but that lack of investment has kept supply in check and has resulted in quite strong pricing. Here is just a trend to show you kind of the pace or velocity of coking coal exports, coking coal supply growth. You can see the bottom is Russia, or the bottom is the U.S. Bottom is Russia, then Australia, then Canada, and the U.S. is at the top with a sliver of there for Mozambique. But you can see that diminishing growth, obviously continued growth out of Australia. A lot of the growth that's currently in the market today is replacement growth for supply that has depleting reserves. That is true in the U.S. That's true in Australia. And a lot of that replacement growth is being funded by the company's own balance sheet. There are very few banks today that will invest in coking coal projects. You have some in China, Korea, a little bit in Russia, but unless you're a well-capitalized company, it's going to be hard to have a funds to bring on a new project at an interest rate that makes sense for to make that project an ongoing concern. So shifting to thermal coal prices, I'm going to start with this graph and then I'll come back, or this chart and I'll come back. Here's where we've ended 2018 in terms of thermal coal exports. We've added 70 million tons of growth, and the U.S. posted the largest growth on a relative basis, 30% increase year over year from the U.S. That was because of what I touched on earlier, which was strength in the Pacific Basin, which allowed the index for Atlantic supply to increase, in which the U.S. was able to sell into at advantageous levels. You're just going through these to give you some color. Indonesia, all this growth is in lignite coal, so very, very low CV or BTU. That really only has limited markets to participate. Russia, their growth was on the back of a depreciating ruble. In 2018, the ruble depreciated almost 20%, so it allowed them to certainly capitalize on that Forex. The coal out of Australia is also relatively low BTU as compared to, I say, East Coast U.S. thermal coal at 5,500 kcal. And then obviously some declines year over year from Colombia and South Africa. The Colombian coal had some issues with regards to production, some weather-related. And then in South Africa, they have some domestic requirements that they had difficult time meeting. But we're seeing a bit of a turnaround in these today, and I'll explain a little bit why. So going back to this graph here, you can see by December 2018, these indices here ranging from $90 to $95. I'd say, for the sake of simplistic purposes, API 2 and API 4 are traded indices here in the Atlantic basin and into India. API 2 was a delivered to Europe index that is really how a lot of the U.S. East Coast thermal coal is being priced, specifically into the Atlantic basin. So you can see the significant fall from December 2018 to where we are today, almost 30%. Actually, just a bit over 30% decline here in API 2 prices. Since the, I'd say, high in October 2018, we're down over 40%. It's quite significant for thermal coal producers today. Fortunately, the players in the market today expect a downturn in the thermal coal cycle to be able to withstand these prices. But again, these prices are extremely challenging and non-sustainable for future of thermal coal growth. The pricing today, API 2 pricing, is $58, roughly speaking, delivered to Europe. So if you take a product from the U.S. East Coast to the Northern Appalachian region, that delivers a price back less than $20 at the mine, which is not a sustainable level to continue producing. Fortunately, the efficient operations at these mines allow them to produce at those levels. There have been significant hedging and forward selling to be able to monetize the 2018 levels and where the forward curve was posting in 2018 to be able to sustain this downturn. And then this is a similar graph to where I showed for coking coal, but just shows the total thermal coal supply and where we are today. Obviously, a different story to the coking coal growth. And we will see this graph continue to kind of extrapolate and accelerate as we move on into 2040 or 2050, mainly due to demand out of the Pacific Basin. We have a graph later to show the diminishing kind of market in Western Europe, and predominantly due to the very, very weak energy complex in Europe at the moment, but in something that will persist until almost Europe becomes virtually a 10 million ton coking or a thermal coal market. A lot of the growth is going to be in Asia. So the challenge for the U.S. guys is being able to reduce costs, the thermal producers, to be able to take advantage of a strong Pacific market going forward. And this is just a chart to show, or a graph to show kind of the testament of U.S. resilience and responsiveness in the market. In 2 years, the U.S. was able to double our exports, both for thermal and metallurgical coal. That's a testament to the mines, to the service providers, the rail and port infrastructure, kind of the ability to hang in the market despite challenging times. This is one of the reasons why the industry calls the U.S. a swing supplier to the market, but that would imply that we actually were not exporting, but we were just at relatively low levels to where we are today. And this is a testament to the U.S. and a lot of people in this room, actually. Maybe what we're watching going forward, obviously, economic growth is directly correlated to coal demand. We watch these OECD projections as they come out, and there's supposed to be one that comes out actually tomorrow that updates this March 2019 indication. But I guess the theme is just kind of decelerating growth. Should lead to a deceleration in steel production and ultimately, coal-intensive crude steel or pig iron production. If you look at where we are today, in end of March 2019, year-to-date pig iron production is down 1.3% when taking out China. If you add China, you're at 5.1% increase in pig iron growth. I mean, this is what's going to support pricing. This is what's going to support the export market, not only globally, but here in the U.S. Now, the concern is that this, you can see that number for China, 9.3% pig iron growth in the first 3 months of this year compared to the same period last year. That's on the back of very, very strong fiscal stimulus in China. You can only stimulate the economy so many times before you start to have a deleterious effect as debt continues to rise. So right now we're at a point where it seems to be okay, unless if the trade war continues and we don't find a resolution, say with the U.S., or if there continue to be issues between Australia and China in terms of unsaid discharge port limitations and quality restrictions and slowdowns in the import of Australian coal, we're going to see this number decrease. Maybe just to narrow a bit down onto China. Obviously, China is producing steel at record levels. In March, they set their highest monthly output ever, and then in April, they beat that number. Again, there was strong fiscal stimulus in the first quarter of the year to be able to counteract some other trade issues that were happening to China. But overall, this is a very good scenario for coal into China, specifically for when the U.S. is able to again produce or sell coal into China as well. If you go back to 2016, you can see that that graph was flattening out significantly. There was a view that crude steel output was going to decrease by 1 to 3%, depending on who you listen to. And that's taken a huge turn given the fiscal stimulus in China and the strength in the domestic market. I'd say so. That strong crude steel production obviously requires coal. Everybody here probably knows that China has its own reserve base to supply itself if it wanted to. Actually, that's kind of a misconception. China has the volume of coal, but not necessarily the quality. You can see, if it's hard to see from where you guys are sitting, but this bottom right graph shows, I'd say, the under 1% coal production in China. It's less than 100 million tons on the back of 1 billion tons of production and probably a 50-plus percent yield. So there is a need for low-sulfur imports. A lot of these mills in China are located on the coast and have a geographical disadvantage to the coal-producing regions in China and ultimately end up paying higher transportation costs, which makes the import alternative favorable. You know, currently we're in a market today where that seaborne arbitrage is in favor of seaborne coals by almost $20 on premium coals. And when I say premium, I'm saying these premium low vols from Australia that are 70 CSR coals, which is that basically in that top line here, the orange line shows kind of the equivalent quality coal in China and how those prices have remained quite strong. So what happens here? This dynamic in China, which is, I'd say, further going to be exacerbated. China's slowly mining through its very good quality coal and will continue to have a reliance at current production, steel production levels on seaborne coals. So Australia is a natural supplier of and the largest supplier to China. But currently we're going through an issue in between China and Australia where there is a slowdown of importing of coals by the Chinese. Being proclaimed as a port restriction, but there is no official announcement that is such. So they are kind of doing additional testing to be able to slow down discharging of Australian coal. They are only discharging coal during daylight hours, in some cases only 6 hours a day, which is a 75% reduction in discharge port times. So this has slowed the entry of Australian coals into China, has resulted in quite strong pricing because of that. The Chinese domestic market is able to take advantage of this strong pricing and keep these kind of Lulin number four or the very premium coking coals in China at strong levels. Because of this dynamic, we have buyers coming to us saying, at what price can you sell me U.S. coal? Now, the U.S. coal alternative is going to be taxed at 28% U.S. coking coal. There's a 3% most favored nations tax that exists, plus a current 25% tariff. So it's obviously hard for a supplier and an exporter out of the U.S. to eat that 28%. But there are buyers that are actually saying, I'll absorb some of that to have low ash, low sulfur. And I say low sulfur, I mean sub 1% sulfur coal into China because of the concerns around the availability of Australian coal. There are some ports where it may take 3 or 4 months to discharge and clear customs to take a cargo of Australian coal. Exco has actually sold a couple cargoes of U.S. coal during this time in which discharged and cleared customs in less than 30 days. So that's a significant change or a significant advantage when it's hard to see where coal prices are going to be more than 2 or 3 months down the road. So I'd say the takeaway from this is that U.S. coal will be poised to be able to increase significant tonnage into China should the production allow when there is a lifting of current tariffs. Obviously, at $200 a ton levels with some quality discount, almost every coking coal in the U.S. can make it to the China market. And I'd say we're talking a lot about China, but I'd say the real growth market for X coal, and I believe for U.S. and Australian coal, not the growth market, is going to be India. India currently takes the most seaborne coal of any coal buying country in the world. When you take out Mongolia, which is all truck into China, India takes the number one spot for seaborne coal imports. India doesn't have a domestic or a significant domestic coking coal reserve supply that they can use to kind of be able to challenge seaborne pricing, so they're kind of left with the prices where we are today. And currently they've been able to increase steel production, and the increase in their domestic market has allowed them to consume that steel at levels that make the seaborne pricing kind of attainable or achievable for the Indian market. Here's kind of a snapshot of the growth in India. You have in less than 5 years 36 million tons of growth in India, and this doesn't include some wild cards. The SR steel, for example, I'm showing at just 10 million tons, but most of you may know that SR steel assets are currently being under negotiation and presumably to be won by a JV between Nippon Steel and ArcelorMittal that will undoubtedly add to increasing that steel production there. JSW has plans to go to 50 million tons. Again, this is only 33 million tons in 2023, but the growth target in India is 300 million tons by 2050. Now, again, that's a bit unlikely, but you can make a case for a very, very quick 25 to 50 million tons, which would be certainly a game changer for the seaborne coking coal market and may allow some new investment. Here's the slide I was mentioning earlier, which kind of shows the weakened energy complex in Western Europe. This is produced by IHS. It's not our data, but we share the same views. If you look at that gray graph on the left, you can see that Western European thermal demand will be 10 or 15 million tons by 2050. Maybe that's off by plus or minus 5 million tons, but certainly that paradigm shift is underway right now. A lot of that supply or that demand, fortunately, will be absorbed by growth in the Mediterranean, the Baltic area, from Turkey, Egypt, and the like. But this is certainly a big impact to U.S. thermal coal exports. The flip side of that is the growth in the Pacific Basin. Now, please keep in mind that the scale of these two charts are quite different. But huge growth in Southeast Asia that will keep thermal coal pricing, I'd say, sustainable. The challenge will be that how does the U.S. react to this, and how does the U.S. take advantage of this current paradigm shift in the thermal coal market? You can read this later, but this is some of the reasoning why that there's this weak energy complex in Europe. A lot of it is on the back of renewable growth and the actual coming to fruition of that renewable growth. I'm sure most of you have read, but in the UK they went 1 week without coal-fired power over the May Day holiday, which is early May. That was the first time they did that, allegedly since 1882. So that's certainly a shift that there'll be more weeks like that, especially in the UK and other countries
surrounding that will make it certainly challenging for U.S. thermal coal to receive any type of price increase into Europe. I see maybe a couple slides to kind of wrap up here. On the coking coal side, you know, we've been wrong now for a couple quarters saying that there's going to be a price correction. But if you look at all of the kind of factors, external factors to the coking coal market, there should be a price correction. At these levels in China, they've supported coking coal prices, which others in the market have had to absorb or take as a result, as China's basically the price setter. Some of the indications we're seeing today are weakening demand in Europe. You know, ArcelorMittal announced a 3 million ton reduction or 3 million ton production cut in crude steel production at multiple facilities, whether it's Spain or to Poland. But, you know, if Arcelor is saying that, the other smaller guys will have similar impacts, as Arcelor can probably absorb better than most. So that's currently what we're seeing today. You know, if you ask Exco today, where is their spot demand for coal in Europe for second half of the year, we'd say nowhere. Their inventory levels at all of these plants and ports, whether it's in ARA or Poland, that can supply in a just-in-time basis some of the demand that's there. On top of that, you have significant inventories sitting in Australia waiting to hit the market, both from a kind of PCI quality up to a premium quality. You may have less of the inventories of, say, Peak Down, Saraji, Goonyella-type premium coals, but there are plenty of other coals that would be happy to discount prices from the current levels we're at today to hit market. Unfortunately, they don't have the infrastructure there to do that, whether it's issues on the rail side or terminal outages. But that, again, should lead to some price correction in the market. Again, China being the biggest wild card here, you know, that, as I mentioned earlier, the arbitrage favoring seaborne coals is open by $20. All it takes is Chinese policy to say we're going to decrease domestic coking coal prices by $20, and now the export market or the seaborne market will take a hit as the domestic alternative is now favorable. On the thermal coal side, again, as I mentioned, it's, you know, I don't want to belabor the point, but the demand in Asia is definitely coming to market. We're already seeing it happening in Malaysia, Indonesia, Vietnam, Thailand, and there is significant growth in that market as well on the coal production side, specifically in Indonesia, which is the largest supplier of thermal coal to that region. You know, they'll continue to produce to be able to kind of keep a lid on those prices in that area, which will make it more challenging for U.S. thermal coal to reach that Asian market. The places where the U.S. thermal coal supply can take advantage of will be the Mediterranean markets, predominantly Turkey, should there be an increase in the current sulfur restriction cap that exists in Turkey. But right now, that market for U.S. thermal coal off the East Coast is India. That market for coal out of the Gulf is also India. So Northern Appalachia, Illinois Basin, coal is... the real only home for that coal at the moment is India, but India can be a big enough market to absorb a lot of that production, but there are other factors that will challenge prices, and those will be alternative fuels. Those fuels can be pet coke, which has zero cost base and has to be sold at any price, or it will be low CV, low BTU coal out of Asia that can't find its way to a home, let's say, and then has to flow back to India, which would challenge prices as well. Fortunately, the coal out of the U.S. is of a better quality than those coals, those low BTU coals, which should garner some premium. But depending on the sulfur level, that premium can be negated by a discount to kind of net neutral. But currently, we do believe there is an export market for thermal coal. Prices are challenging today. But I think we'll be able to find a way to get coal to market in terms of being able to get close, especially to India during this significant growth period there. I'd say just wrapping up, the lack of investment in the coal space is good and bad. It's good in terms of what it's done to prices, but it's been bad in terms of you have kind of companies in what we call harvest mode, which are basically extracting a dividend to their shareholders and not reinvesting capital to the mine to sustain growth for the next period. That needs to happen to keep the U.S. market in play and not have these significant downturns in U.S. exports. The U.S. will continue to be challenged by logistics constraints globally, specifically as the growth is predominantly in Asia. Fortunately, as that growth, a lot of it is centered in India, we're kind of at a neutral point between Asian supply and U.S. supply, where we can still take advantage of that market. And I'd say one other thing to watch is the impact of IMO 2020 regulations, which are, for the sake of getting into detail, very low sulfur diesel fuel regulations on vessels once they get into a certain zone from a loading or a discharge port. So that will only exacerbate the current logistics challenges that the U.S. faces. Fortunately, we produce a quality in the U.S. that globally the world believes is a staple part of their blends, whether that's in coke and coal blends in Europe, Northeast Asia, and soon to be now in India. It should pose a good future for U.S. coal. And that wraps. So thank you, everybody, for your time. Sorry for the long presentation.